DW.
11 people have died on Mount Everest this year in the deadliest climbing season since 2015. Some of those deaths have been blamed on overcrowding and the growing number of inexperienced climbers attempting to conquer the world's highest peak. An alarming photograph taken on May 22nd showed a traffic jam of people stuck on the narrow ridge leading up to the summit, an area called the Death Zone. Climbers can only survive there for a few hours because it's over 8,000 metres high and the air is extremely thin. One of the climbers on the mountain that day was Lydia Brady, a mountaineer and guide from New Zealand. In 1988, she became the first woman to reach the summit of Mount Everest without using supplemental oxygen, and she's climbed it five more times since then. Lydia joined me on the line from Otago, New Zealand, and I began by asking her what's changed over the last 30 years.
Guiding was just beginning to happen at a very elite level from Europe on Everest when I climbed on 1988, but very limited. And the people who would climb on Everest were all climbers, and they were all experienced climbers in those days. And when you said, I'm going to go and climb Everest, the first question that you would be asked was, what route are you climbing? Because everyone was a climber, so you might go and try a different route or a hard route or a second ascent or a first ascent without oxygen. You would try something. And that never, ever, ever gets asked now. Everyone is just on two routes on Everest, and it's fully guided and fully fixed rope. And there's a whole lot of people who do maybe one or two mountains, and then they go to climb Everest because that's all they want to do, and they are not very good on their feet. I don't mind that they're there, but the fact that they are really, really slow and they clog things up creates a danger. Yeah.
Well, which brings me to my next question. You were on Everest on May 22nd this year when there was that traffic jam of climbers on the Nepali side in the death zone leading to the summit. And it was captured in that amazing photograph that went viral, which shows this massive lineup of people stuck on that ridge. You summited from the Tibetan side on that day, so you weren't in the queue. But how did you react when you saw that photograph afterwards?
Oh, look, I sort of felt grief. And the reason I felt grief is because there will be no Sherpas up there on the same amount of oxygen as their clients. So it was cold. One of the reasons that there were not very many weather windows this season is because the weather was, it wasn't snowy. It was just very, very cold temperatures and quite high winds. I have no idea, and I won't until I start talking to a few people when I go back to Kathmandu, how many Sherpas got frostbite. They don't have as good of fancy clothes. They don't have as good of boots often, not always. And they definitely do not have as much oxygen. So it made me feel quite sick, but it wasn't sick from, oh, I think that's a circus. It was just sick from anxiety for my friends, if you like.
This season, 11 people died on Everest. I mean, is it a freak season or is it in a way to be expected when there are so many people and maybe many people who aren't so experienced in these altitudes or on these types of mountains?
So it's absolutely critically everything. It's a whole lot more people than normal. It's a large majority of those people with very limited experience, and it's a very narrow weather window. So we have seasons with narrow weather windows. Actually, a friend of ours just summited on the 30th. So there was more good weather coming, but people don't want to wait, and we didn't see it in the forecasts. So there was a lot of pressure to go. Yes, it's unusual to have such a narrow weather window, but we also must expect it. It is the mountains.
There have been calls for authorities to limit numbers or introduce rules requiring people to have climbed other 8,000-metre peaks. What do you think about those kind of ideas?
Well, I think all ideas have to be mooted. We have to start saying, well, what are we going to do? And at the same time, all of us in the mountaineering community will be saying, please, no more rules. There's already a million rules to climbing on Everest, let alone the rule of you know, paying for your permit, which is $11,000 per person. So we kind of don't want rules, but we are looking for solutions. And one of the solutions is that we could go and climb it like we used to climb it in the olden days. And at the moment, all of our climbing, all of our commercial operations, all of these happen pre-monsoon or in the Northern Hemisphere spring. In those days, we climbed it pre-monsoon and post-monsoon. Now, I climbed it in October when I first climbed it without oxygen. And, you know, why don't we just go climbing post-monsoon? Then we can spread all these people out over that time. And, you know, maybe we don't get those dramatic congestion lines.
You first summited Mount Everest in 1988, the first woman to climb without supplementary oxygen. And I believe you spent about 10 minutes at the top and you were alone. Can you describe for us what it's like to be up there?
On that trip, my journey up was quite fearful, and not the whole journey, but once I got to the south summit. So I climbed from the Nepal side, and the south summit is 100 vertical meters and quite a lot of distance from the main summit. So I got to the south summit and I met some Spanish, and they had somebody who was really hypoxic, and they had to do a rescue that took about another 3 days. And after that, when they went down and I went up, and I had to decide whether to go to the main summit. And at that point, I knew I had enough energy, if you like, to go to look after myself and go straight down. Like I could have turned around and gone down safely. And I figured I had enough energy to get to the summit, but I didn't know if I had enough energy to get back from the summit. Mm. And so I made this commitment, and I probably will never be as brave again. And I went slowly, slowly to the main summit. And that was a really fearful journey. And it was fearful up. And when I got to the top, it was like, okay, I'm on the top. Great. I can turn around and I can go down. And so I kind of postponed my joy. And it was like, oh, my God, I'm here. I'm really, 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 really relieved. Just to put some emphasis on that. And then I turned around and I came down, and that wasn't simple. I nearly stopped and didn't go on the Hillary step because I was worried about falling. And then I managed to rationalize myself out of that. But once I got down below the South Summit, and then I just stopped and I knew I could do it. I knew I could do it. I didn't actually understand quite how exhausted I would be by the time I got all the way down. But at that point, I go, I'm okay. I'm going to do it. And then I was just like, yeah. And I looked across, and the afternoon, evening light was shining on the west face of Makalu, which is one of our big, big mountains, our fifth highest in the world. And I just go, oh, my God, I want to go and climb that. So I was quite obsessed by climbing in those days.
Do you think you'll go up Everest again?
Oh, I'm getting old, you know. I'm getting a bit older. So I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. You never say never. Never say never, but it's only a couple of weeks ago I climbed it. So you might have to give me a few more weeks before I feel that I'm strong enough to go and climb Everest again.
And when you look back at all the mountains you've climbed and all the climbing you've done all over the world, has there been a moment or a view or a place that's really stood out above the others?
Yes, there's been quite a lot. But seeing we're talking about Everest, you know, we're talking about the politics and we're talking about the crowding and we're talking about all this kind of stuff. But, you know, the last two ascents that I've done on Everest have been absolutely wicked. So in 2018, I summited on an adventure consultants expedition from the south side. We passed everyone. And by the time we got to the balcony, which is 8,500, our team, which is just these two guys I was guiding, my clients, me and four Sherpa, we were climbing alone. So from there, from 8,500, we had Mount Everest to ourselves. And we saw the dawn break around the curvature of the earth on the summit. And we just had the most amazing, amazing, amazing ascent. And then this ascent was just, it was really special. We were alone on the summit again. So the last 2 years have been absolutely fantastic.
DW.